Going live. I think we're live, and let's see. Welcome back, everybody. Taxation is theft. James Weeks.
Hey, welcome. That's me.
How's it going?
Yeah, relatively okay.
So I heard you got a little bit of a cold, and you're drinking some good stuff. So I got my little cerveza over here. It's my last one. You're better stocked than I am.
Yeah, I got a little bit of a cold. I do the NyQuil.
The good stuff. Cool, man. So, welcome. You're always an interesting guy to talk to. Where do we start? Where do we begin?
Where do we begin?
I don't want to say you're most well-known for stripping on stage at the Libertarian Conference, but you're most well-known for stripping on stage at the Libertarian Conference.
I suppose so.
Let's talk about that. Because there's a lot of people who are just like, oh, what a despicable behavior. We can't allow that. And no one's going to take us seriously. Not like anybody does in the first place. But what do you say to those people?
Nice spooks, nerd.
Man, I mean, I hear that and I'm like, okay, this party is supposed to be like all about freedom to do whatever you want. And it's like they want to be led by people that are so unfree that they can't, like, oh, you can't go on stage without proper attire because, you know, blah, blah, blah. You don't have the freedom to do that. But we are the party of freedom. You just don't have the freedom to do that on our stage.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that I think take themselves a little bit too seriously. They got nice stick up their butt. And people really need to have some fun every once in a while. But, you know, the problem is, you know, the Libertarian Party is so infested with social conservatives that, you know, the sight of a little bit of freedom makes them, you know, clutch their pearls and faint on couches and shit. So, you know, there's a lot of these, you know, pearl-clutching social conservatives out there that really get upset at freedom, which is weird that they're in, you know, the Libertarian Party, because Libertarian Party is the party of freedom, party of, you know, free expression, allegedly.
Allegedly, exactly. Yeah, and what's really interesting is, so my friend got me to go to church with him the other day. No reaction there. Some of your friends, I won't say who, just went, oh my god, you went to church. Did you burn up on entry? But of course I don't usually go, but I went, and it was really interesting to see. And one thing in particular that I took away from it was, you know, even if you censor out all the references to any type of deity, it was really interesting to see that, like, okay, so these people were there for a prayer ceremony, a spiritual thing, but they were really, like, they were there for two reasons. One, to be inspired and motivated outside of church. So basically, to, like, a lot of the sermon went on about, you know, how to live your life, how to be good to people around you, how to be thankful and appreciative, because this was this was in November. But then they also had, like, a lot of, this is one of those churches where they had, like, the band and a lot of music and everything. And it was really interesting to see, because that really got the crowd motivated, and you know, they were there, they were happy, they were excited to be a part of that thing. And I think what you did was kind of that in the form of the Libertarian conventions, because it's a business meeting. Everyone's there and they're all grumpy, they're arguing over crap. And, like, you know, we need a little bit of fun to break it up.
To put commas.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, if I had
we got to put a comma here.
If I had a nickel for every comma,
a nickel over every argument over proper placement of a comma, or whether we say individuals or adults, or whether we say, you know, all these just arguments about petty. Yeah. Bullshit that doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and it seems like that's always that always seems to be, like, you know, some guy who's like, oh, well, I'm smarter, so I know how that's going to be misinterpreted in the future. And we can't allow that to pass as is.
Yeah, we can't allow it to pass that is if it doesn't say, you know, if you don't use the Oxford comma, people are going to think you're talking about something entirely different.
Children are going to die.
Children are going to die if you don't put a comma in the right place. If you use the Oxford comma, the whole world's going to end. You know, we'll never win in elections if you don't use the Oxford comma.
No one's going to take us seriously.
we really do need to have a little bit more fun at business meetings like that. Because, I mean, really, we're libertarians. To be honest, we're LARPing politics. Let's fucking be honest here. We're not winning elections. We're not doing that. We're LARPing this shit. You might as well fucking have fun while you're LARPing. Come on.
Yeah, it's and that's another interesting point too, because you have a lot of people that are like, no, we want to take this seriously. We want to put a serious candidate in. And it's like, okay, first of all, when you do that, that doesn't improve our chances of winning anything.
No, but serious candidates come in fourth place, we saw in New York.
Yeah, but then also, it completely waters down the message. And it's like, my platform for the thing I'm working on is because I get the concept, right? Like, we want to appeal to a larger audience so that we can get our foot in the door with them and expose them.
You know
them.
What appeals to a larger audience? Drinking hams.
There you go. Exactly. It's like, we don't need to sacrifice our values to get a message in front of them. We just need to speak their language. But yeah, you know, like you said, there was a TEDx talk about pasta sauce, and it's like, you know, this company spent 10 years and millions of dollars trying to figure out and do all this research. What's the absolute best pasta sauce that we can make? And it turned out, no, there is no best pasta sauce. There's 10 different flavors you have to make because everybody wants a different flavor. Somebody wants the one with olives and onions, and somebody wants the garlic or the cheese or, you know, whatever. And that's really what I think politics comes down to is different people want to hear different things. And if it all comes back to, We want to kind of bait the hook with the things that they're into, whether it's, you know, we get the drinking crowd, we got the marijuana crowd, we get all these different crowds by saying we're in your crowd, but now, hey, here's this non-aggression principle. Let's teach you about that. Let's teach you about what anarchy really means. Let's teach you why we don't need government, any of that stuff. It gets our foot in the door because they're like, oh, he's one of us. He's not some fucking Republican with set up his ass.
I think a lot of people kind of don't understand what the best purpose and the best thing that we can do in the Libertarian Party and in politics in general, when we're using political action as a soapbox to spread the message. We can get people to listen to us a little bit better when we say, hey, we're so-and-so running for whatever position. It gets more media attention for our activism. It gets more attention from the general public because it, you know, elevates us up and puts a soapbox under us because people pay attention to politics during election season. So it gives us that opportunity to spread the message to people that wouldn't normally just listen to us if we're just ranting and raving in the streets about fuck the government. When we say, hey, you know, I'm running for this position and fuck the government, people listen to fuck the government a little bit more. You know, of course, you don't just say fuck the government, but you can. I mean, why not? I'm not going to stop you. If you want to make your entire campaign just fuck the government and that's the only thing you say, more power to you. But, you know, it gives people a greater chance to hear what you're having to say, and it allows your message to be broadcast to way more people when you're able to get media attention, international media attention for libertarian races. And we've seen so many great examples of this, like with Brian Ellison with the Arm the Homeless thing. We
Sandra
saw with
Salas.
Sandra Salas. Salas. Yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it. Salas or Salas?
I said Salas.
Salas. Sandra Salas with her, you know, posted nudes on Twitter while running for Congress, was able to get international media attention. You know, stuff like that, you're able to get media attention. It elevates your position, and you're able to spread the message much more, much farther than you would otherwise. Because when you're spreading a libertarian message, it's hard. You know, people don't really want to listen to that shit. People don't want to listen to the problems with government. People want to hear about, you know, whatever the next, whatever, you know, media story is on there. They don't want to hear about politics.
That's actually, like, you know, really relevant to the whole, you know, as much as we talk about, you know, everybody's so asleep, nobody knows who their candidates are, what they're voting on. It's really exactly because of that. They can turn on CNN and learn about economics and all this other, you know, foreign policy and all this other crap that's going on. But the reality is they don't care. They're, you know, they're, like, it puts them to sleep. And so if you talk about something that relates to them more directly, then that's how you get their attention. And then you can you can throw in some other things about, you know, about foreign policy and economics. But, you know, they're, if that's all you talk about, no one's going to listen to you because nobody cares.
And if you're not getting on CNN, if they're not talking about your campaign on CNN, if they're not talking about your campaign on the media, if they're not, you know, if your shit is not out there, people aren't even going to see you. And that's a big problem. Like, when, like for example, when Gary Johnson ran for president in not this last time, but the time before that. No. Yeah, this last time. 2016. I heard stories of people going, you know, oh, that was that Gary Johnson? Because they didn't even fucking know. Because he wasn't getting really good media attention.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I talked to people all the time. And they're, you know, I talk to people all the time about, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, I hate Trump, but I hate Hillary. And, you know, to this day, which is now like, what, 2 years after the election, well, did you know that there was a third person on the ballot? There was? What? And this is like after they went and after they cast their vote, they still don't know that there was a third person on there.
Right, because he's not getting media attention.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And the media is not going to pay attention to you if you're just boring ass milquetoast candidates.
Yeah, that was what was you know, it was funny because I was pushing for McAfee, and. You know, he, like, my argument that I had with a lot of people was, you know, they were like, oh, but Gary Johnson's a former governor and he's going to be able to get lots of media because he's already got lots of connections and he's going to be able to raise money and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, have you been watching?
Where was that media?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, have you been watching CNN? Have you been like, McAfee's already in the mainstream media. Let's just keep it going. And he's saying legit things. And I remember one guy, he was like, yeah, well, he keeps brushing his nose like he's been doing cocaine because of his drug history. And so I'm like, well, that's okay, maybe, but he doesn't seem like he's all coked up. But, yeah, so.
He should have done coke right on live TV.
But here's the other thing.
So much headlines.
I started, like, so after, like, you know, months later.
I would have busted out some fat rails right on the fucking debate stage at the convention.
That would have been awesome. But, like, I was defending it because I know he did something, right? But then so I looked at some of the footage later on. He wasn't even brushing his nose. He plays with his mustache. Like, he goes like this. Like, he's not even touching his nose.
I do that with my beard.
Yeah, like, anyone with facial hair. I do that, like, even when I have, like, this kind of little shit growing out. Like, I'm sometimes just playing with it. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, it goes back to that thing about everybody's everybody's decisions are made emotionally and not logically. And so they already decided they wanted Gary Johnson and not McAfee. And they just wanted to, like, then they use the rationale to, like, try and justify it. So they come up with anything like, oh, he was doing this behavior and that must mean something else, which is why I can't possibly vote for him. Mm-hmm. You know, just like a confirmation bias kind of crap.
Yeah. But you can't really expect that much. They wanted the most milquetoast guy that could run against, you know, Trump and Hillary to have the whole Trump and Hillary thing. Trump won because he was getting media attention.
Yep.
The media attention is what gets it. He got millions of dollars in free coverage.
Yep.
He's an expert at that. And he won. You know, that is what wins. Trump is the perfect example of why we need media attention, and we can't be running these boring ass milquetoast bullshits that don't get attention, that no one, especially when you're running against someone like Trump, who's a media whore, who gets all the kinds of media attention. He's constantly getting, that's what he thrives on. That's his entire fucking career. That's what he's done for his entire life. He's ran businesses into the ground, but got a ton of media attention. So people think he's some brilliant businessman.
Absolutely.
You know, but he's bankrupted, what, 18 companies?
Well, that's and that alone is like a that's like a strategic thing that, you know, shysters like him always do. They like, oh, let's see, I'm going to transfer all my assets to this other business, and then I've got all this debt with this other business, so I'm going to shut that one down in bankruptcy, get rid of all the debt, and reform over here. Now I just made a shit ton of money, and I don't have to pay back all this debt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Brian Ellison is in the comment, and he just said what I thought I typed, titties are a spook. That is kind of hard to read. I don't know if it's the font. No, titles are a spook. It's titles, man. Titles.
okay, does it say titties or titles?
Titles. I mean, like if you draw like a little black line through the L, you'd get a titties, but
you're trying to get me into taking my shirt off, aren't you?
I might. just a couple more drinks. but yeah, I mean you're absolutely right with that, and it's So everything that everyone said about McAfee, or about Vermin Supreme, let's go there. He's a joke. He's not a real candidate. He's never going to win. That's the same shit like the mainstream media was saying about Trump the whole time. Oh, he's a joke. He's never going to win. And mm-hmm. they helped him. They don't even.
That's what got him to win.
Yeah, I don't know if they knew that they were helping him or not. I would think they would, because they're a pretty good, they're a pretty well-oiled propaganda machine. I would think they would know that they're helping him. Maybe they were like, well, we'll make fun of him enough, but we're gonna pull out right before he becomes president, and oops.
No, that backfired on him.
Yeah, it didn't. They got a weak pullout game.
Very weak. Very weak. Can't even pull out the driveway. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, is that Vermin Supreme would have been the best possible choice, really. And I was a huge Daryl W. Perry supporter. You know, I supported him for the 2016 nomination because I thought he was perfect at the articulating libertarian principles. But Vermin Supreme would have honestly been the best possible choice to have, and it would have cemented the libertarian vote as the protest vote. Not just a protest vote, but the protest vote, where anyone who says, fuck these candidates, they'd vote for the Libertarian Party. And that would have brought non-voters out to vote Libertarian, and it would have cemented it forever in history that the Libertarian Party is the party you vote for when you want to say, fuck the establishment. And that's exactly what the Libertarian Party is failing at, because the Libertarian Party is trying to become, like, the party you vote for when you're a Republican, but you don't hate foreigners and homosexuals.
Right.
Like, that's – and even that's, like, not even a thing. Like, there's a lot of people in the Libertarian Party where they're trying to bring in where it's like, you just got to be a Republican. You can still hate, you know, hate people. Still hate the, you know, LGBT community. You can still hate foreigners. You know, you have all these fucking racist sons of bitches running around with their bullshit alt-right nonsense. But – you know, so like, but the main picture that it seems like people are trying to put out there is that of the Gary Johnson. You're a Republican who's just not a hateful asshole.
Yeah.
And that's not going to get people excited, because most of Republicans are just fucking hateful assholes. You know, you're not going to get those Republicans that come over and vote Libertarian because they want someone who's saying fuck the Mexicans. That's what Republican Party wants. That's what they fucking went head over heels for Donald Trump, because he said that racist ass shit. Right. You know, so trying to be like the milquetoast Republican is not going to work. You know, that's not going to win you any support. There's a huge bunch of people who don't vote, who say, fuck the Republicans, fuck the Democrats. That's a majority of people in the United States, is the people who are saying, fuck the system, I'm not voting. And, you know, if you put someone up like Vermin Supreme, who's that fuck the system vote, it would get those people out there. You know, yeah, we need to cement, like, and then we can run your milquetoast bullshit after we cement right. The Libertarian Party as the protest vote. Then we can run the Gary Johnsons and all that guy, the Bill Welds or whatever. But first we need the Vermin Supreme. We need the Vermin Supreme to get it out to the media that we are the opposition. because right now they don't know we're the opposition.
You know, Vermin Supreme is just a regular vermin with lettuce, lettuce and onions and cheese.
Wasn't that, that's what a Supreme is, right?
yeah, but I mean, like, so, like, as much as people say Vermin is a joke, like, he's even, like, so his whole shtick is that he's a comic, he's a parody of what politics is, but if you actually look into it, it's actually really well thought out. It's a very critical analysis. It's a comical analysis, but it's a very critical analysis of all of the people who are running. I mean, he's the tyrant you can trust, which is literally like what, you know, whether you wanted Hillary or Trump, you wanted a tyrant. It was just your tyrant, the tyrant that you could trust because they were on mm-hmm. your side. They were going to favor you and oppress the others. It's like everything that he says is like a really kind of profound recognition of the state of politics today, I think. And I think mm-hmm. that brings a valuable perspective to the conversation.
It does. Plus, it cements this as the protest vote. Yeah. While getting, you know, anarchist messages out there in a funny way.
Now, what do you think?
Making fun of the system and putting a mirror up to the system.
What do you think would actually happen if somebody like Vermin, let's say, hypothetically, let's not talk about whether or not it could actually happen. Let's say he does win and he becomes president. What do you think he would actually do?
Wait, what? A libertarian candidate winning?
Yeah. Forget it. I mean, look, this is a hypothetical scenario here, right?
Oh God, no! I'm thinking of getting him like the 5% required for the major party matching funds. You know, I'm thinking.
Can Vermin be trusted in the Oval Office?
Well, definitely more than Trump.
Yep.
Let's get real. I would trust about anyone over Trump in the Oval Office. And Vermin Supreme is a smart, intelligent man. And if he can make pony identification cards work and mandatory toothbrushing laws work and, you know, zombie power work, you know, I'm fully behind that. But
let's talk about zombie power for a second, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say he says, okay, look, we're going to divert $500 billion a year into this zombie power program. And of course, nothing ever comes out of it because there are no zombies.
Well, coincidentally, I just happened to open up a zombie power research institute out of my living room. So
you'd get that money. You'd hire a bunch of researchers. And eventually, what would happen? The government would say it's kind of the question.
Well, what happened when Obama gave like $80 million to a solar power research company that like didn't exist?
Mm-hmm. Nothing, yeah, right?
I mean, like
it just kicked the debt up and it made interest rates.
What's the difference between Vermin Supreme, kicking $80 million to a zombie power research firm and, Obama kicking $80 million to a solar power company?
Well, here's what's interesting. If he did do something like that, I think it would create, realistically, in a hypothetical scenario, if some asshole president did that, I think that would be kind of the straw that broke the camel's back as far as, like, this is fucking insane. We got to stop paying our taxes because whatever we give this fucking nutcase, he's going to abuse it. And this might wake up the rest of the country who's, like, okay with paying taxes because I get police and roads. It might wake them up to, like, holy shit, we gave all this power to this government to rob us and finally, there's somebody in office. I don't know how he got there, but there's somebody in office and he is just throwing all of this money away. Maybe we shouldn't have given all this power to the government and maybe we mm-hmm. should stop giving them money.
You never know. It might play out that way.
It's
people might be really happy with their ponies.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, they did give away $700 billion to the banks, what, two times, three times?
Yeah.
And
people were like, oh, whatever.
Well, I guess
here's the thing is that we're talking about if you can win. It's absolutely asinine, a libertarian winning presidency. Not now.
Well, I'm just saying in a fantasy world. Like, because, you know, like, let's say we're making a movie.
Let's fast forward to that fantasy land. Let's make the fantasy land reality and how that reality would actually be achieved. First, you would have to get to a point where there is no government. But by the time libertarians would be able to even get elected, the government would already be abolished. If 50% of the voting, 50+1% of the voting population, enough to swing the Electoral College, enough to even win the Electoral College with the superdelegates and all that kind of shit, you know, were able to become president, government would have to have shrunken so much that it was non-existent at this point in time. Because by the time there's that many libertarians out there, you know, we've already taken state houses. We've already taken the, you know, the legislature. By the time a libertarian gets elected president, there will be no president.
I mean, so unless that happens really all in the same cycle.
That's not going to happen all in the same cycle. You're not going to have all of a sudden a swing like that. Maybe two.
I guess you're right. The smaller offices are already leading. They're already getting closer to winning those. I mean, they already are winning some of the really small local.
Really small locals are the ones that you might have a chance at winning. Right. I mean, for fuck's sake. In my campaign for county commissioner, where literally all I did was put up one Facebook ad and respond to one questionnaire, I got 22% of the vote.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely...
You know, that was literally me. I put one Facebook ad up and one questionnaire, and I got 22% of the vote. Imagine if I had tried.
Well, then there's also the question of, okay, but what if those other 80% were just the straight ticket votes where it really wouldn't have mattered?
Michigan doesn't have straight ticket voting. Well, it didn't during the election. It does now because of Prop 2, but there was no straight ticket voting then.
I mean, some people they're going to go down the ballot and go straight ticket. Yeah, They got
straight ticket voting in the Michigan Constitution this last election. But you know, to be honest with you, I'm not really mad at that because I mean there are straight ticket libertarian voters.
That's true.
I know people who straight ticket just go in there and check libertarian and walk out, and they are mad as hell that they got rid of straight ticket voting because they don't want to press all the buttons. They want to go in, check one box, and be done with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, shit, everyone's already talking about it. I just want to be able to log on to Facebook and press a button and do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, and having straight ticket voting doesn't get rid of being able to go and check the other boxes to individually go and do that.
So here's an interesting question.
So I'm not there's a lot of libertarians that are like, well, I'm opposed to straight ticket voting, but I'm not really opposed to it necessarily.
What about getting rid of all the party affiliations from the ballot? So it just has a name.
I mean, that wouldn't be too bad. But, I mean, you look at what happens with – I mean, the parties would just mail out their mailers anyway, and you know whose party's who.
That's true.
So it really wouldn't matter. Maybe randomized appearance on the ballot line too, so in order of parties.
I mean, if it didn't have the party name on there, you'd kind of eliminate the votes of the people who are absolutely clueless. But like you said, people would have the mailers, like the voting guides and all that crap, and they'd take those in. So you'd have those voters who are – halfway clueless, but at least clueless enough to, or, you know, one little clue to bring the voting guide with them.
To be honest, I'm not really so keen on voting at all.
Yep.
Like, it's not really a big deal. Like, all this vote, vote, vote shit. I mean, I want the Libertarian Party to be the protest vote. Don't get me wrong. But we're not going to vote our way into a libertarian society. The idea of, you know, libertarian revolution through electoral success is absolutely fucking asinine in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of see it as, you know, I see it as a good thing. So, like, if we can get somebody in, so, like, let's say we get a libertarian into any, like, whether it's a state or the U.S. Congress, they're a voice, the voice of reason who can argue against all this other crap that's going to pass anyway. But, I mean, you're kind of right in the same way where it's the way I see it is people vote because they want somebody else to solve their problems. And in a libertarian society, it's everybody learns to solve their own problems. They're not really voting for, you know, some sort of leader who's going to use force to solve their problems. And so you might have like, oh, I have these problems in my life that I'd like to be solved. They would actually be able to say, okay, I can't vote for somebody to force the world to change, but what I can do is I can find somebody who's a thought leader in this, in the, you know, who can maybe give me some advice and guidance into making this part of my life better. And, you know, and that's, you know, whether maybe it's dealing with a noisy neighbor or dealing with your business and competition, whatever that may be, you're not voting, and you're voting with your dollar in a way. You're saying, I want this guy to teach me. I want this guy to show me how to solve my own problems, versus, you know, going to the ballot and saying, we're going to elect this guy and he's going to tell everybody how to solve these problems the right way. And he's going to choose my problems over the other guy's problems. And he might hurt the other guy trying to make my problems go away, which is, yes, kind of the system of voting that we have. But kind of what I've always said is, like, you know, even like, I don't think abstaining from voting is really solving the problem either. If you still have, you know, if even like, I don't know, 30% of the population is going and they're voting, they're still picking rulers. They're still getting jobs working for the government. The government has what, something like 5 million employees, something like that. If those 5 million people are controlling us, it doesn't matter if the other 200 or 315 million are sitting it out. Those 5 million people are in powerful enough positions with enough guns and ammo to control us all. And arguably there's a lot of our neighbors who aren't part of the government who are the snitches, and they're helping that structure stay, you know, in order. But I think the critical mass to kind of make that whole thing go away is a lot higher than, you know, just 50% or 60%. I think it's actually much higher. But I think as people start to wake up and we start getting that momentum, I think it is going to start happening faster. And I mean, you know, like, we already see people working for the military who are like, oh, this is bullshit. We're just out here murdering people and stealing oil. There's already military doing that. So,
that's been going on for 100 years or more of, you know, military realizing that they're pawns for, you know, the capitalist establishment. I mean, you look at Major General Smedley Butler's book, War is a Racket. Was that written in, like, was it, what year was that written in? Like 19 something, early 1900s. I can't remember exactly when War is a Racket is written, but, you know, he was the most decorated Marine ever, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wrote a whole book about how all the wars in South America were all at the behest of capitalist interests trying to move in, and the United States was just using its military as a pawn for expansion of, you know, the corporations' control, and, you know, Dole and all, you know, all these companies. And he wrote a whole book about that shit.
Yeah.
That was almost 100 years ago now.
So it's there. I think it grows in momentum, and especially now with, you know, with social media, where, you know, just more soldiers can communicate and get their message out there. I think that idea spreads, and the more, like, you know, it's just like when anything goes viral, you know, if more people can identify with a meme and press like and comment and share, then, which, by the way, if you're watching this video, like and comment and share. The more that happens, the more that someone can identify with that, the further those messages go. And so as more of the population identifies with the message that, yeah, the military isn't protecting our freedom, then when you actually have soldiers coming out and speaking on this, those messages go further and wider. And I think that, like, it's momentum. It's like it's the snowball effect. We just start growing faster. And yeah, once we get to that point, people are going to stop asking government for anything. And then once government starts fizzling away, then we'll just stop showing up to vote. I think that's legitimate. That's mm-hmm. a legitimate possible future.
Yeah. But the big thing is that, first and foremost, the Libertarian Party needs to become the protest vote. We can no longer be the vote of the Republican who's slightly unsatisfied with the way the Republican Party is going. We have to be a vote of no confidence in the system. We have to be a true opposition vote, something that highlights that both the major parties are bullshit. And if we can't highlight that, if we can't bring to light that that is, then what the fuck are we doing? We're just wasting our time. If we're not out, if we're not able to get that message out there. And the big thing is, who's running for president to do that? You know, you need someone, because that is the big office, and you better, you know, you're running for president. You know, so you got to be that guy. This is what, you know, you got to be that guy that says fuck the government. And not, and maybe nicer words than that. Need to highlight that the Republican and Democrat Party are bullshit, and we need to do away with them, and they're nothing but a bunch of tyrants, two sides of the same coin, two wings of the same bird. You know, we need to highlight that. We need to stop trying to be the goddamn tail feather on that fucking bird. You know? Yeah. Like, for fuck's sake. Are people really going to want to be like, well, the wing wins. Why would I vote for the fucking tail feather?
You know? Yeah, so let's cut the head off and stick it on a spear and walk around with it like that.
Exactly. Cut the fucking head off, walk around with it at the fucking end of a stick. That's how you get those votes of those disenfranchised voters. Yeah. That's how you get those votes of the people who don't vote, the people who don't bother going on there. You're walking around with a goddamn head on a fucking pike.
And hey, well, at least that gets their attention. What's going on over there? What's that all about?
Yeah. They might listen to what you have to say if you're walking around with a fucking the bird's head on a.
Yeah,
now, I'm not recommending you go and behead a bird on the Libertarian Party debate stage in 2020. But... I don't know. Work for Ozzy. You bite off a head of a bat.
Right?
You know, why not? Fuck it.
I'm not going to do it to a bald eagle, that's for sure.
Dude, totally. Bite off the head of a bald eagle and then drive down to the Alamo and piss on the Alamo.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I just offended every single Texan listening.
Yeah.
I can't wait to read the comment section.
Man, and it's oh, man, you know, you heard what they're doing to the Alamo now, right?
Putting up signs that say James can't piss on it?
No, they're doing something where they're trying to do like some multi-million dollar renovation and like rebuild part of it and like destroy another half of it and like some crazy nonsense.
That seems like a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, they voted to pass like a bill that I had Matt Pena on the show and he was talking all about it. It was like an insane amount of money that they're going to be putting into this thing. And turning it into like some fucking ridiculous thing. They're gonna put like a rail car through there because, you know, we need rail cars because it's the most efficient.
That's exactly what you need at the Alamo is a fucking rail car.
It's so fucking ridiculous, man.
That's government for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like literally like you elect people to sit in a room and like. Figure out things to do to make life better for everybody. And when everything's great and there's
and
nothing
they
to do.
They come up with putting a rail car at the Alamo.
Yeah, they just come up with like a bunch of fucking nonsense. Like, I know.
And people think zombie power is crazy.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, see, that's what we need to do. We need to get the zombie power and then we need to send the zombies into like all these government chambers and have them start biting all the elected officials. And use that. I mean, you know, they were voted in to help the country. So let's have them help us now that they've become absolutely useless by powering
them to work on treadmills. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. And we'll just zombify them so that they're, you know, they're happy to do it.
Seems like a good plan.
Man. So, okay. I want to ask you about this. So how does this work? You are an ordained minister. Is that right?
Yes.
So you do weddings, half nude.
Yes. I've done them wearing thong. Yes.
So, when you do these, do you go and do you get a government certificate to certify these weddings? How does this work?
Well, I guess it depends. I've done both uncertified and certified. In Michigan, how it works is I don't go to the government. I sign the sheet that the couple goes to the government and asks for permission for, and then I send it to the government. But I've done both licensed and unlicensed marriages, which I just snitched on myself. That's like a 6-month, $500 fine penalty for doing unlicensed marriage.
Oh my God.
I James Weeks II, have performed unlicensed marriages in the state of Michigan. Please come and arrest me for that. I'd love for you to throw me in jail for that. I will make such a big deal about it. Please lock me up for that.
Sir,
yeah,
you,
I've performed.
Do you know how fast you were marrying without a license?
Yeah, it's 6 fucking months in jail.
Holy
it's like,
shit.
It's like for not having a fucking piece of paper or permission slip from the government to perform a marriage.
Has anybody – now, this is not your permission to be able to marry. This is you performing the marriage without the couple having the license saying that you're allowed to then marry them.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever been charged with this in the past? I'm going to Google this now.
Not that I've heard in recent past.
Okay, this is how I'm going to Google this. Florida man arrested for unlicensed wedding.
Well, it'd be Michigan, so Florida wouldn't work.
Yeah, but I know it's Florida, right? And so the first result that comes up is Florida man charged with practicing unlicensed dentistry. Okay, so let me get rid of Florida man. Let's just do arrested for unlicensed wedding. Local charges filed against unlicensed wedding officiant. Well, that would be.
Yep, that would be what I was doing.
Well, no, that would be against. That would be if you did not have your license, but.
No. There is no license in the state of Michigan to perform marriages. You just need to be a minister of the book, which is loosely defined. And I am, so there's no license. I don't have to have a license in the state of Michigan to perform a marriage.
Okay.
I'm a minister of the gospel, according to the state of Michigan. I meet the legal requirements of that. And so I can perform marriages in the state of Michigan. There are other states that I would need to submit, like, letters of good standing from the church and blah. Every state's fucking different. Michigan is pretty easy as far as that goes. I could totally go to jail for it. For it just being for if you don't have that permission slip from the government and you perform a marriage.
I'm seeing a couple of cases come up here. One's in Massachusetts, one's in Rhode Island. Unlicensed wedding minister arrested.
Yeah, I was actually before the Supreme Court came down and ruled same-sex marriage a constitutional right, I was trying to organize with a gentleman who was an officer in the Libertarian Party of Michigan, who was also a minister, and he was, he was also a gay man, and I was trying to organize a with him as a protest to protest against, the ban on same-sex marriage. We were going to find couples that would like to be wed and illegally wed them on the Capitol steps in Michigan, and then, of course, go to jail for it as a protest. And but then the Supreme Court ruling came down, and so that whole thing went away. He ended up leaving the Libertarian Party after that because that was like his one big issue, and so the thing never happened. But that would have been a really cool, act of civil disobedience.
With like a polygamist wedding?
I mean, that would still work for a polygamist wedding, yeah.
If anyone
that wants to have an unlicensed polygamist wedding in the state of Michigan, look me up.
All right, let's get that going. So, let me ask this: what would be the difference between, let's say, two people get married, one with a license and one without a license? What would be the difference?
I didn't sign a goddamn piece of paper.
Is there, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, but there's tax benefits, which from what I understand, those benefits aren't even really benefits. They really work out about the same unless they work out the same if you're both working, but if only one of the couple is working, then you get basically a deduction for two incomes when you only have one income, versus if you're both working, you have two incomes and you get deductions for two incomes.
I don't think that it's all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah,
to be honest, the tax benefits.
I've actually heard of people getting divorced so that they can save money on taxes. But I mean, that's it, right? Why don't people just like shack up and say, "Hey, we're married"?
Well, because the benefits aren't necessarily tax benefits. There are a lot of the benefits can be done through other means, like contracts and wills and stuff like that. Power of attorney. There's lots of ways you can go around and get the same benefits. But like when it comes to like when your loved one's in a hospital, boom, you can make decisions without all the fancy fucking paperwork needing to be filed with them. It's boom, there you go. Just stuff like that. You know, so it's not just tax benefits. There are other reasons to have that deal with like medical decisions and inheritance and stuff like that. And then also there's, of course, that your spouse cannot be compelled to testify against you, which is a fucking big one. And probably the most important of the marital benefits is that. Because if someone's not your spouse, they can be compelled to testify against you.
Hmm. That's an interesting one to know. Anybody who's listening.
We should all get married.
Yes. Yeah, right? Hey, yeah, can we do like some like multi... Like
polygamy and have all libertarians get married.
I'm going to marry my drug dealer.
Exactly. You ain't making me catch up. There's that benefit. That's the big one. On top of the medical decisions and all that kind of stuff, but the big one is the not being able to be compelled to testify against your spouse.
I wonder, so like the medical one, you can do with power of attorney to some
power
degree.
Of attorney, but
you
the
just
one
need
that
to
cannot
file
be done.
There's yeah, more it, paperwork.
Mm-hmm. The one that cannot be done is the compelled to testify part. So that is probably the most important reason to get that piece of paper signed is that. Because an unlicensed marriage, they'd still be able to, because they don't recognize the marriage. They'd lock me in jail and they make you testify against each other. But with a licensed marriage, that's the one thing that you really get. And so, you know, that's why I have no objection to performing those, even though, you know, most of the marriages I performed have been unlicensed.
I'm just thinking this needs to be a new part of my platform, that we need to have anybody who you claim to be your spouse or even a best friend, you should be able to not have to testify against them.
Or you just make it so you don't have to testify against everyone. Yeah. You cannot be compelled to testify.
I mean, realistically, nobody should be. You have the right to remain silent, right? That doesn't.
Yeah, but you don't have the right
to
remain
testify
silent.
Against yourself. Include,
that's testify against yourself.
But what I mean,
they can compel you to testify against
arguably,
others.
Arguably, you could say.
You could try and argue that you're incriminating yourself by testifying against them.
Right.
But then that opens up a whole fucking can of worms with them trying to investigate you.
But
you know what I'm saying?
It's not necessarily because when you plead the fifth, you don't have to answer any questions as to how answering that question might incriminate you. You just have to say, I'm not going to answer that question.
Theoretically.
So, I mean, if you know, I'm just thinking here, like most people who would get married without a license are probably of the libertarian type who hate government, who if they were ever asked to testify against the spouse anyway, they would probably just say, I'm going to plead the fifth. Sorry, fuck you. What are you going to do about it?
They'll lock you in jail. Contempt of court and all that kind of other shit.
I don't know. Maybe that's up for some civil disobedience right there.
Yeah, I mean, civil disobedience is one thing, but not being able to be compelled to testify against your spouse is a pretty good one.
Yep. All right.
Now, mind you, that your spouse can still testify against you if they want to.
Right. Which, so, yeah,
don't
be careful who you marry.
Careful who you marry there. You know, I think a lot of people think that they just your spouse can't testify against you. That's not the way it is.
Right.
At all.
Yeah, it's like I know plenty of idiots who think, oh, the police can't search my car. So when the cop asks, can I search your car? And you say, go ahead. I know you don't have a warrant. Well, sorry. You just gave him permission. You're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, police can do whatever they want, though. They're the police. Yeah. They got guns.
Oh, yeah. I smelled marijuana, so I searched his car, and I just happened to find marijuana that I just happened to plant.
I had a cop one time ask me if I had any guns in the car, and I told him no. And he claimed that he gained probable...
he smelled gunpowder.
He pulled me out of the car, and he said that he had probable cause because I hesitated when I said no.
Because you wouldn't just think, well, let's see, sometimes I do. No, I don't.
Yeah.
I had to think about it for a minute. I took them out last night. No, I don't.
Yeah.
That's not a possibility.
And then, of course, he found a bunch of bullets in my car. And he really wanted to find that gun that the bullets went to.
Oh, man. Yeah,
but
fucking...
no, I just had a bunch of bullets in my car. Sorry, officer.
Fishermen. That's what they are. They're, yeah, I got stopped by these two cops and they asked if they could search my car and I was like, no. And they were like, well, why not? And I'm like, well, not that I have to give you a reason, but I got places to be. And so of course they were, you know, I drive unregistered, and with a foreign license. So of course they hold me there to do their investigation, which usually takes an hour. And they're looking through my windows like the floorboard of your trunk. It's like an SUV, right? So the floorboard of your trunk looks like it's a little bit higher. Is there a hidden compartment in there? Like they're looking like through tinted windows. They probably couldn't even see in there. And they're saying this shit. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? But yeah, they're fucking fishermen. They brought the dog just to sniff around the car just in case. Because I guess I was on like a drug route where, you know, half the cars they stop have some kind of drugs in them.
You just figure you got drugs.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, well, there's a 15% chance you got drugs, especially because you don't have any license plates. Must be a criminal. But hey, the way I look at it is they held me on the side of the road for about an hour, and I can just imagine how many drugs we're able to get past in the safety of that pathway that I cleared for them by getting those police off.
Oh, that's a really good way to look at that. I should go get pulled over more often.
Especially on the drug routes. And like, yeah. And like, just get like something that totally looks like a drug smuggler car and like spray paint drugs on the side of it and, you know, marijuana stickers all over it. Do that at the border too.
Yeah.
Because once, you know, as soon as they pull someone over, they start letting the other cars through. So they can't do too many searches at once.
Mm-hmm.
TSA even does that. If you've been at the airport, like in the, it's usually in the really early hours of the morning when there's like this massive rush, like the first planes are getting packed up like all at the same time, like right around 6 or 7, and like every single flight is going, the lines are just ridiculously long. They tell you, don't take off your belts, don't take off your shoes, just throw all your shit, go in the express lane, just throw all your shit in the boxes and just push it through. There probably isn't even a guy looking at what's going through the X-ray machine, and they're just rushing everybody through. It's fucking bullshit. So if you ever want to hijack a plane, that's the time to do it. Just saying, not that I'm advocating anybody to do that, but it's fucking ridiculous. Like, oh, it's there for our safety. No, it's there so they can fucking charge us some money. So all the companies who manufacture this fancy new equipment that they're always buying can sell that shit. Cause who else are they going to sell it to? They've got these new, like, have you seen these things that they have now where like it's too simple to just like pull a pull a tray out of the stack of boxes, out of the stack of trays, and like put your stuff in it and stick it on the conveyor belt. Now they have this system where like the box, the trays are fed to you through this thing, and then you put your stuff in it, and then you have to lift it up and put it on top of this thing. And then there's a TSA agent there making sure that the stuff is going smoothly along over these rollers. And then like when it's your turn, the thing sucks your tray in and pushes it in, but it's like so fucking inefficient. But they're sitting there, oh, it's actually more efficient. It gets passengers through faster. And I'm like, fucking really? Because like from the time I get to the point where I can grab a basket and start putting my stuff in it, it usually takes me 5 minutes of standing here waiting, doing absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, I go through the airports in Mexico where they have the old system, and I just throw my shit in the bin. And from the time that they scan my, you know, scan my passport and my ticket and tell me to go up to the X-ray machine, even if there's a line, like I'm usually through there in like a minute. It's ridiculous.
They don't have that shit in Detroit last time I flew.
I don't remember if they did when I flew. But yeah, it's a fucking ridiculous system. Some company came up with the design for that fucking thing. It probably costs $1 million per installation, and they probably charged $50 million and made probably, a nice little profit. And then
made a nice chunk of change.
Yeah, and then convinced TSA, oh, you need one of these in every airport because efficiency, which it's not. And yeah, fuck that. What?
Man. You should be able to fly with shotguns,
right? Couldn't you used to?
Yeah.
There's this scene.
Used to be able to carry on a shotgun.
There's this scene on. I heard the reason that they banned. They used to allow the pilots to carry pistols. But they banned that because some pilot accidentally shot himself in the leg while he was like trying to do some fucking something. I don't know. And so that was when they said, okay, pilots can't have them anymore.
One guy has to go and fuck everything up.
Yeah. Right. But there's a scene in, it's the beginning of, I think it's the first Die Hard movie, where Bruce Willis is on the plane and he like leans over to get his bag out of the top, and his jacket opens up, and like he's got his holster in there with his little gun, and like this woman like sitting in the seat underneath him is like, oh my god, and he looks down at her and he's like, it's okay, I'm a cop. And I was just like, oh my god, this is like fucking excellent propaganda right here. Only cops should have it's okay for guns to be in a public place as long as it's a cop. That was just fucking weird. That scene has always weirded me out for some reason.
So what you're saying is just tell people you're cops if they see your gun.
I guess. Did he have a badge? I mean, he was flying to LA and he was a New York cop, so I don't know why he would have been wearing his badge.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have been wearing his badge. You have to watch the scene.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been an off-duty cop anyway, right?
Yeah. Off-duty cops aren't supposed to be able to get away with shit like that, are they? Aren't they supposed to have to carry it concealed or whatever?
Yeah, but also this was in, what, the 80s, so I don't know. I can't imagine California. Well, no, California had open carry pistol laws until just about a decade ago. But it was just it was not very well known, because I remember there were protesters out there who were doing it. And of course, California didn't like it, so they banned it from there. But they were open carrying pistols, and the cops would harass them. But at the end of the day, they would be like, "Well, yeah, but it's legal." And the cops would be like, "Okay, well, I guess we can't fucking arrest them."
Michigan doesn't have any laws about open carry. That's why open carry is allowed.
So it's lawful.
Yeah, there's no laws allowing it. There's just no laws banning it.
That's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. That's the way marijuana should be.
Yep. Which, I don't know what's going to happen in Mexico now. Did you hear about the Supreme Court down here?
Yeah, ruled that marijuana prohibition's unconstitutional.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I heard about that. I don't know what that all would mean or entail or what that would do.
It sounds, from the articles I read, they said basically people should be able to grow and buy and sell and possess at this point. But ultimately, they said that the ruling didn't, like, the ruling would allow them to regulate it, like, you know, alcohol, like, ages and limits and amounts and, you know, whatever shit like that. But there are no laws about that right now. So in theory, if the only law right now is prohibition, like complete prohibition, and that law is invalid, somebody should be able to like drive around with 500 pounds of it, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, theoretically.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. But we'll see what happens in the next couple years or whatever with that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to find out. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, all the all the money from the all the tourism is going to start coming to Mexico. All the drug money that's spent is going to stop being spent in the U.S. It's all going to be spent in Mexico, and Trump's going to have his wall up, so the money's not going to flow back over. And
people will be trying to get over the wall.
Yeah,
get into Mexico.
Oh wait, there are those things. What are they called? Airplanes.
Yeah, but those are expensive.
Man,
just hop a fence and you're over smoking legal weed.
Yep. Man. All right. Well, I think we're at about time for tonight. But do you have any websites you want to promote?
Yeah, podcast titles are spook.com. Podcast titles are spook.com. Podcast titles are spook.com.
All right. Wait. Oh, so, okay. I was thinking it was podcasts are a spook, but it's podcast titles are a spook, which makes more sense now that we have titles are a spook.
Yeah, the podcast is called Podcast Titles Are a Spook.
That's the
title of my podcast is Podcast Titles Are a Spook.
That's podcast titles, not podcast titties.
Yeah, podcast titles are a spook.com. Check the website out.
All right. Awesome, man. And don't forget to go to taxationstheft.cards. Go get your T-shirts and hats and flags and beach towels and mugs and all that kind of cool stuff. And until then, what is taxation?
Theft. And rent is theft.
Oh, you had to slip that one in at the end. Oh, we're going to have to agree to disagree for now. All right, man, it's been awesome talking with you as usual, and we'll have you on again sometime, and we'll see you again in Taxation is Theft, and
rent is theft.
Rent is theft.